Pushkin. A week after his arrest, in early April 1981, Fred took a polygraph exam. Surprisingly, it wasn't ordered by law enforcement. It was ordered by Fred's defense team. Polygraph tests are notoriously unreliable, but Fred's lawyers were hoping that a successful polygraph would help prove his innocence. There was a lot to go over. Fred had entered a plea of not guilty, but the second autopsy showed trauma to Verna and Doug, bruises and marks that seemed to bolster the cops' working theory that Fred had killed them violently. The polygraph was meant to bring clarity. It was a pass-fail test. Fred was either a liar or he wasn't.
If you didn't have any connection with their death, other than accidental, then believe me, you'll pass the polygraph.
This is the polygraph examiner explaining the process to Fred.
I have no idea if you're going to be lying to me or telling me the truth. But after we get into this for a couple hours, you're going to find out I can tell when you lie. If you're responsible for doing that, or you tell them underneath water or anything like that, then of course, if you're involved that way, then you will fail the polygraph.
After the examiner had established Fred's baseline, how he reacted to questions of various kinds, he started asking him about Verna, Doug, and what happened on January 2nd, 1981, the day they drowned.
Did Verna have on life jacket? Did you have on one?
No.
Because I understand she's a pretty good swimmer, huh?
No, that's a bunch of bullshit.
That's a bunch of bullshit? How about Doug? Was he a good swimmer?
The only time that Verna's been swimming since we bought the boat and bought our house in Malibu. I think when we went to my parents' house, she went in the pool, but she was really not a good swimmer.
How'd you get along with her? Was everything okay in the bedroom? Was everything okay socially?
Actually, everything was terrific in the bedroom.
Good. How about between the three of you, Doug, yourself, and Verna? What was the relationship then? Good, bad, or indifferent?
Yeah. I would say it would be good with a qualification.
The qualification was that they disagreed about how to handle Doug.
If there were going to be points of concern between Verna and I about the children, that's where it normally came.
The examiner flipped the tape over to the other side, then continued asking Fred about the day of the drownings.
Well, then you were tired as hell, weren't you? So another 45 minutes with two bodies on you, weren't you? Did you almost die? But keep you going, Fred. That's okay, just sit there and relax. Were you afraid of dying? Just couldn't stop, could you?
Fred had started getting emotional.
Did you think if you stopped, you would have died?
I just knew that I was wearing down. I've been a diver for a long time. I know when I'm tired underwater. I know when my breathing is screwed up and I can't get my breath. And all those things were going on. I was taking on water. It just was all turned to shit.
The exam lasted over an hour. Near the end, Fred told the examiner he wasn't feeling so good.
We'll see how you do first. Okay?
I'm pretty gooey.
Yeah, you are sweaty, aren't you? Is this normal or is this abnormal?
It's been going on for a number of days. I don't know.
How do you feel?
Awful, Fred said. A few minutes later, the tape ends. When I asked Fred the result of the polygraph, he told me it was inconclusive. He didn't pass or fail, he said, and the polygraph was never a factor in the trial. But there was one question the examiner asked that seemed to come almost out of the blue. It was abstract and vague, and yet it drove right to the heart of the investigation, right to the heart of Fred's motivations in life.
Which do you love the most, love or money?
That one, Fred didn't answer right away. And when he did, his voice had the controlled, deliberate quality of a valedictorian on graduation day.
I think love is the most important thing for me. Okay, now as you guys...
But the question of money and how badly Fred needed it, that was exactly what law enforcement had been trying to figure out. I'm Dana Goodyear, and this is Lost Hills. Episode 7, Love or Money? Fred and Verna were supposed to be a love story. They'd both overcome the tragic, untimely deaths of their first spouses to find love again. But there were some irregularities in the origin story. One, it seemed like maybe they'd gotten together before Jean died. When the Santa Barbara detectives asked around about Fred and Verna, they heard one thing loud and clear. Whether you approved or you didn't, it had been a whirlwind romance. In handwritten notes Fred made around the time of his trial, he laid out the way in which his relationship with Verna changed. Babysitter, friend, lover, wife. At the line for lover, he writes, DA dates. As if he's trying to get a handle on what law enforcement knew. That's because the detectives had started to suspect that Fred and Verna were having an affair before Jean died. Verna's friend and confidant, Patty Lytell, had told them as much. And when Fred's investigator went to talk to her, she doubled down. Here she is, talking to the investigator.
I didn't ask her if she was having an affair with him. She told me she was.
She told? Okay. With Fred?
You have to realize Verna and I were very close, and living that close together.
Okay.
That would be a problem, were it ever to come out in court. Questioned by the detectives, Fred's sailing buddy, Dick Felthoen, admitted to his affair with Jean. But Fred always denied knowing about it. Even to this day, he denies it. And he denies he and Verna got together before Jean's death. Because if he knew Jean was cheating and he wanted to be with Verna, those affairs would establish a powerful motive, not just for him to kill Jean, but who knows, maybe for him to kill Verna's first husband too. So they might have been together before they were together. But then there was something else the detectives uncovered, even more shocking to their church friends. When they got married, they weren't really married.
Do you recall the marriage ceremony on the beach? Okay.
This is a private investigator hired by Fred's defense, talking to Verna's good friend, Michelle Williams, and her husband, Dick.
Were you aware when that ceremony was held that they were not legally married?
No.
Okay.
That moving ceremony, Christmas of 1977, when Fred and Verna dressed the kids up in matching outfits and they all exchanged rings, it wasn't actually a wedding.
Did that make any difference to you, finding that out?
I found out 2 weeks ago.
Hey. What was that? I didn't know.
They were not legally married during that ceremony. That it was a religious ceremony. I don't really understand the whole thing. I just found that out 2 weeks ago at a Little League game. So,
John Hager, the minister from the Methodist Church, had performed the ceremony, so the guests had assumed it was legit.
Well, John Hager was the guy that was there on the beach that day, and he's the guy who married him, so I don't know what the difference is. But apparently, some of the people who have, you know, said some bad things about Fred and Verna thought that that was just awful, that they'd been deceived and so on and so forth. So I don't...
Had they not applied for marriage license?
I don't know what the circumstances were. I'm just asking the questions to try and find out.
Hmm. I'm not sure exactly what it means either, because he's an ordained minister, and, it could have been financial, that's all I could think of.
That was exactly it. Fred later wrote that the reason he and Verna hadn't married then was economic. Because if she remarried, Verna would stop getting pension and Social Security benefits from her deceased husband, Bill. Fred and Verna kept it quiet, but in a handwritten will, Verna spelled it all out. While I am not legally married to Frederick George Raylor II because of financial and tax purposes, she wrote, we are married in the eyes of God, and that is what really counts. If she died, she continued, she intended for Fred to raise her children, Kim and Doug, and, quote, continue the finances of my estate with no other appointed trustee or executor. The wedding that wasn't raised a red flag for the Santa Barbara detectives. And Verna's will was one of the many items listed on the warrant they got in order to search the house on Sea Level Drive. But in that search, they also found another suspicious document in a desk drawer. A confidential record of another wedding. This one legal. Fred and Verna had been married, secretly, by the same minister. But it was more than 2 years after the wedding on the beach. Their actual marriage date was July 12, 1980, just 5 months before Verna's death. By the time Verna died, the couple's assets had been transferred to a trust they'd set up with help from Fred's old friend and lawyer, Bill Fairfield. The purpose of the Johnson Raylor Trust, Fred said, was to prevent any gossip that might arise about financial gain should he or Verna die. The detectives found the flowchart for the trust in the silver case underneath a desk in the living room, along with a guidebook for widows, and what appeared to be Fred's diary of the day that Verna and Doug drowned. The Santa Barbara detectives, Fred Ray and Claude Tuller, were talking to everyone in Malibu about every aspect of Fred's life with Verna. Verna's old friend Patty Lytle told them that back when Fred and Verna first got together, Fred had pressured Verna to get married right away. Patty said Fred was trying to marry Verna just a couple months after Jean died, but Verna seemed to worry what people would think. Patty had advised Verna to take it slow, maybe live with Fred a while before deciding. And she told Verna what she was really worried about. She didn't think Fred loved her. She thought he was after her property on Broad Beach. Even though they hadn't gotten married right away, Fred did figure out a financially beneficial solution. While he and Verna remained officially unmarried, she could continue to collect her first husband's benefits. And then once they did marry officially, their assets, including her house, would go into the trust, of which Fred and Verna were co-trustees, of which Fred became the sole trustee once she died. When the detectives had interviewed Fred back in January, they'd asked a lot of questions about his finances.
What would you say before you and Verna got married that your individual net worth was?
Before we got married?
Yeah.
Probably in the order of $500,000 a piece.
How was her in what form was her money?
Real estate.
Okay. What real estate was it?
She has some houses. There's a house in Broad Beach.
Are there any other houses that she owns?
Not that she owns. I have two other houses. I have a house in on Calpine, and then I have one in Oxnard.
Calpine is around here somewhere? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's off Pacific Coast Highway.
Do you own any other houses?
Were you and her buying this one? Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Fred's relationship with Verna, their merger, he sometimes called it, began at a moment when they had each inherited a modest fortune in real estate, insurance money, and other benefits from their first spouses. When Jean died, Fred received about $75,000 in insurance money. That's about $360,000 in today's dollars. Her Social Security benefits threw off the equivalent of another $38,000 in today's money every year. When she was alive and talking about divorce, Jean and Fred owned two properties, a house in Oxnard and the Calpine House in Malibu. But with Jean gone, Fred became the sole owner at a time when Malibu home values were spiking. The Oxnard House was also on the coast in an up-and-coming neighborhood called the Silver Strand. He ended up turning both houses into income properties. The insurance policy on Verna's first husband, Bill Johnson, paid Verna a substantial sum, about $250,000 in today's money. She also got his generous pension and Social Security benefits. And she became the sole owner of the property on Broad Beach Road, a duplex with a garage apartment right on the beach, in a neighborhood Allie McGraw would soon be priced out of. Outside of the rental properties, the family's income was a hodgepodge. Fred only earned about $30,000 a year from his job as an underwater engineer at Point Magoo. That's just over $100,000 in today's money. And according to his colleague, Dennis O'Gorman, Fred's ambition had been in free fall ever since Jean died. Here's O'Gorman talking to an investigator.
He seemed very despondent about things. Was philosophizing, for instance. He started talking about how, really, you know, it should be a socialistic society. Everybody ought to be allowed to do whatever it is that they want to do. So if you decide you want to be a beach bum, you get the same number of bucks as some guy who wants to sit in an office and do calculations all day. Okay, no matter what you want to do, you ought to be able to do it. I mean, it's your life and it's so short. Why not enjoy it to the utmost? Yeah. You know, the perfect world, if you have it on earth.
And that's Fred basically stopped working.
And it seemed like the more he got away with, the more he wanted to get away with. And every job that Fred had was given to somebody else, which really ticked us off. I mean, we liked the work, but now we're carrying a hell of a workload, okay, more than our share. And here's one man who's making more money than any one of us because he's been there longer and he's higher up on the scale, and he's not doing anything. And not only is he not doing anything, but he's tying up the phones on personal calls. He's now dating Verna. And he's making personal calls to his girlfriends, to his lawyers for property investments or whatever the hell it is. You know, anyway, they're personal calls. He has a smirk on his face like he knows that we know what's going on and there's nothing anybody can do or wants to do about it. And by God, it's just kiss my ass, you know, that kind of attitude. And it's infuriating.
Then, from 1978 to 1980, Fred really stopped working. He'd injured his back, or so he said. On the polygraph, he admitted to fudging that a bit. Fred did have a little side business building redwood hot tubs. Here he is talking to an investigator in 1981.
You built hot tubs?
Yeah.
You actually
whacked them out of wood.
Whacked them out of wood.
Jim is
and install them for people, or?
Yeah.
I see.
Mostly friends. It was not a lucrative situation.
There was Verna's pay from her teaching job, which amounted to just a couple grand a year. They had the benefits from their first spouses and the income from their various properties. Their houses might have been worth a lot, but cash flow? How is this all working? In the spring of 1980, about 9 months before Verna and Doug drowned, Fred and Verna bought Perseverance, their 50-foot sailboat. The price tag? Around $150,000, five times Fred's annual salary at Point Magoo, back when he was working. Perseverance was fancy. This is Dempsey Billy, an investigator for the Santa Barbara DA's office. I talked to him recently. He remembered Perseverance very well.
The sailboat, it was there in Ventura Harbor, and it was a really nice boat. It had a fireplace in it. Not too many sailboats that I've been around have a fireplace in them.
Fred's solvency was of great interest to the detectives. How was this guy who made so little money leveling up in Malibu? By the time they went back and questioned Fred a second time, on January 20th, 1981,
they'd learned a lot about his tumultuous relationship with Jean, and that he'd improved his financial position, and certainly his real estate holdings, upon her death. So, they had a few more questions for Fred.
Did you and Bernie have any marital problems?
No.
How would you describe your relationship, your marriage?
I would say we had as good a relationship overall. Anybody I've known, we shared the same aspirations. We've gone through really a learning process for deciding what we really wanted to do with the children and buying the boat and all those things. We shared interest in the children. We shared interest in each other, things that we like to do, friends, we had common friends.
Were you having any financial problems, or are you having any financial problems?
Today, Fred says he wasn't underwater. Quite the contrary.
When they were saying that, oh, I was broke, I said, well, the thing you didn't search when you tore up my house was you didn't go into the deep freeze. I had a safe in there with $30,000 cash and about $5,000 in traveler's checks in it. And they were sort of stunned, and then they asked the detective if he had looked in the deep freeze, and he said, of course, he hadn't.
What was that for, and where did it come from?
Ever since I'd been making payments on different things, and when I no longer made payments on them, I basically put some money aside in a safe, and I put it in our chest deep freeze under a bunch of frozen crates of orange juice, and that's where I kept our passports and, our papers and everything else in there. It was in the garage, and the prosecution went nuts when they found out that their super detectives hadn't found it.
$35,000 is a hefty chunk of change. It's equivalent to about $110,000 today. Fred basically had a year's salary in his freezer underneath the orange juice. Why would anyone keep that much cash just lying around his house? To own a sailboat, one as stunning as Perseverance, it was Fred's dream come true. She was brand new and sleek, toothpaste white with teak decks and trim. Everything about her, down to the name, was perfect.
Vern and I looked at each other and said, I don't think we could think of anything more apropos than that for us. For all the stuff that we'd gone through, Both of our lives were not smooth. They had bumps all over them. So we both sort of felt that having persevered, we were very fortunate to have found each other and be doing well with our family.
No longer would Fred be cleaning the bottom of Dick Valthoen's boat. He would take his boat and go anywhere he pleased. In fact, when Detectives Ray and Tuller first came to see him, Fred dropped a big piece of news on them. He and Verna and the kids had been about to set sail on a long trip. They'd planned to be gone for months, maybe a year.
We were to leave the end of this month. We had been getting provisions and food and medical things and just literally everything to get ready to go.
Where were you going to go on the trip?
We were going to go to Mexico. And we were going to do a lot of documentation, and the children each had a logbook for writing down all the things that they were feeling and seeing and some things like that.
The kids were going to journal, and Fred would take photos and film. They were thinking about writing a book or making a movie about their adventure. The story of their trip, told through the children's eyes.
On your Mexico cruise, or were you headed for any particular place?
No, not really. We have picked up a bunch of charts and talked to a number of people. And our intentions were to basically just hop all along the peninsula and then come back up into the Gulf of California and spend some time up there. I had read Steinbeck's book, Sea of Cortez, and I gave her a copy of that.
Did she have any particular theories or anything of going?
Yeah, she really didn't like the shipping lanes very much. And didn't like fog very much. That was her big thing.
Later, Fred made some notes about how the Mexico plan had come to be. Quote, sitting in hot tub, September 1979. Concern about raising the children in Malibu. Dope. Peer groups. Solution? Pack up and go cruising? According to Fred, the trip to Mexico had motivated him and Verna to get organized. In the fall of 1980, right after he and Verna were legally married, they began some vigorous estate planning. They started buying insurance. Detective Ray asked Fred about this when questioning him about Verna and Doug.
Were they both insured?
Yeah, our whole family was insured.
Our whole family. What company are they insured through?
Travelers, I believe.
Was that in her name or your name or whose name was it?
Well, we had just set up a trust and gone through a whole estate planning thing.
Do you have the policy around?
I think that's probably in the safety deposit box. I'm not sure.
Okay. How much was the policies for?
I think there's $400,000 on myself and Verna, and $60,000 on each of the four children.
That was almost it. There were also accidental death riders, worth an additional $300,000 for each of the adults, and an additional $60,000 for each of the kids. Doug's policy named his surviving siblings. Fred was the beneficiary of Verna's policy. That meant the payout from her death was $700,000 in 1981 money, which is about $2.25 million today. The detectives wanted more details, because they said the insurance company would be calling them in the course of processing the claims.
They were pretty patient for a few months, but then after that, they start getting pressure from you to settle, and then, or your family, or whoever's the beneficiary of the trust, I think it'd be you and the kids, right?
I don't think so. I think somehow the trust is, but I don't recall the mechanics of that.
You think the trust is, I don't understand it.
I think that the trust is a beneficiary, as opposed to either of us.
Oh, in other words, if something happens, everything goes into the trust.
Fred said he and the kids weren't the beneficiaries. The Johnson Railer Trust was. That was a little slippery. The funds from the insurance would maybe end up in the trust, like any other family asset. But Fred was named on Verna's policy. The money would be his. Fred also didn't say that he was the trustee. If the insurance money flowed into the trust, he would control it. It was right around then that Fred decided he had said enough. He needed to talk to his friend Bill Fairfield, the lawyer who'd advised him and Verna on the trust.
I guess I want everything to be as settled, as much information as I can give you. And at the same time, I know he's going to break my arm if I just do everything without talking to him. I have not spoken to him at all.
The detectives weren't buying the Mexico trip as a reason for taking out huge insurance policies. It reeked of planning. Like Fred was thinking about the murders and the ways he'd cover them up. And the insurance. Well, that looked like another pattern in his life. Because Fred, the detectives were learning, knew a thing or two about insurance.
Lighting his car on fire to get an insurance settlement to act as a down payment on a new car.
The parents, but they burned down a farmhouse to collect the insurance, as I understand.
Fires, bike accidents, car accidents, tractor accidents, a houseboat on fire, Papap's barn on fire.
If it's true, and I say if, it shows early on the ability to conceive of insurance fraud.
Just all of the horrible accidents that can happen to one family.
The detectives had found a motive to hand to the district attorney. It was the Malibu lifestyle. Fred, they thought, wanted to live a life of leisure, like so many of the ritzy folks buying up all the beach houses in Malibu. To accomplish this, the detectives surmised, Fred would need a big windfall. Say, $700,000 in insurance money from an accident with no witnesses. Coming up on the next episode of Lost Hills, what was Verna worth to Fred?
She was his life. In fact, just showed him the way that life could be. I'm saying Verna meant to him something that money couldn't buy.
That's next in episode 8, Three Freds. Lost Hills is written and reported by me, Dana Goodyear. It's created by me and Ben Adair and produced by Western Sound and Pushkin Industries. Subscribe to Pushkin Plus and you can hear the whole season ad-free and get early access to the final two episodes. Find Pushkin Plus on the Lost Hills show page in Apple Podcasts or at pushkin.fm.